So there are times when I read these poems in the beginning of the episode, and I'm struck by the fact that the Berensteins are not, and never have been, poets. They're just not poets. They strain for a rhyme sometimes. But every once in a while, one comes along that is so deliriously amazing that I am blessed with a vision of the entire creative process that went into this rhyme. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, if you're listening to this, or, you know, one of your people is listening to this, as to how this came about, but the opening poem goes as such. We're off to the science fair. Fair enough, that's the point of the book, spoilers. To learn the depths of Lake Erie. So already I'm like, all right, well, I assume at some point in this book, we'll be discussing the depth of Lake Erie. I said depths. It's to learn the depth of Lake Erie. A pretty simple thing to figure out, to find out. Obviously, there's various points of depth in Lake Erie, but I assume they mean the deepest part of Lake Erie, maybe the average depth of Lake Erie. I'm not sure. Clearly, this book will address that. We're off to the science fair to learn the depth of Lake Erie, with many cheerful facts about Lake Erie, perhaps. Perhaps? No! About relativity theory. Spoiler alert, Lake Erie never gets brought up in this entire book, but it's half of the poem. Half of the poem. The rhyme in the poem is structured around Lake Erie, or is it? It's actually structured around relativity theory, which plays a major part in this book. So I'm like, I guess what's happened here is Mike couldn't find a rhyme to science. We're off to learn about science, or, you know, we're off to Bear Country School to learn a lot about science. Something, 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 electrical appliance, or some kind of compliance. I don't know. Like, maybe Mike was just like, I don't know. But relativity theory plays a big part in this story, so I'll use that as my rhyme. He throws it down, and then he's like, I can't think of anything that rhymes with relativity. I can't think of anything that rhymes with theory besides Lake Erie, I guess. I don't know. That's my biggest. Every once in a while, one of these poems is so labored, sweaty, to get to its point that it reveals all of the hidden facets of it. Sorry that I spent so long talking about the opening poem, which is completely irrelevant to the rest of the book, but, well, I guess now we're on our way. See you on the other side. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and I'm going to be doing... This is not going to be a long episode. You know why? Because I've set myself a time limit, and I already wasted a good chunk of that talking about the poem at the beginning of this week's book. And the beginning of this week's book is the Berenstain Bears Big School Project from 2023. That's right, not last year. I would have said last year, last week or the week before, but 2023 is the Big School Project. Remember when this book came out? It was a big deal. I remember Mike was excited about it. I remember Brad and Jeremy were excited about it. It was because it looked like this is something we haven't tackled before, which is just science in general. We've tackled science, just the bears. We know that the bears like science. We know that one of their best friends is science related. One of their family friends owns the Bearsonian Museum, which has a lot of science in it. Built a robot, did he? He did. Robo the robot that got out of hand and had to be put down. Literally had to be. Had to be put down, like the run-amok robot literally had to be put out of its misery because it was violent and self-aware. And I think that's what happened. And actual factual was like, the world's not ready for a robot like this. And he beat it to death and buried it in a grave, not an unmarked grave, just a grave. He buried it in a grave in front of the Bearsonian so that all other robots, I guess, would know not to tread on this hallowed ground. I don't know, but it was just like, we gotta kill this robot that we created, but then we gotta remind everyone that we once killed a robot that was a book cover character, beat it to death with a crowbar. I don't remember how exactly they beat the robot to death, but they dismantled it and buried it in a grave, which says a lot about Bear Country's attitudes toward souls and the afterlife. I think. I don't remember. That was a long time ago. It was a big chapter book. Check it out. Berenstain Bears and the Runamuck Robot. But this one's not about a runamuck robot, although it does have a robot, which does not run amok, but does clean up a bunch, which kind of can rhyme with runamuck. If I was writing a poem that needed runamuck to be a rhyme, I'd be like, once come with the bear family. Their robots don't run amok, but they do other things like pick up and clean up. See, rhyming is easy. Poetry is easy. Anyone can do it. So the Berenstain Bears Big School Project by Mike Berenstain from 2023. What's it about? Is it about a science fair? That's what the poem said. It is. It actually is. But it's about so much more. And I'm going to come right out and say it. This is probably one of my favorite books of the last few years, just because it touches on subjects that I haven't, that we really don't ever address. The nature of science, the purpose of science. What does it mean to learn? What does it mean to be a lover of science? What does it mean to explore a subject without care about, what does it mean to be a purely self-fulfilled, like a scientist who cares only about self-fulfillment, I guess. I don't know. This also touches on like the product versus the process, the notion of winning. What does it mean to win? And also, what is the theory of relativity? And how does that play into this story? Also, why do eggs stink when they rot? We don't know. I mean, we do know. And volcanoes. How many kinds are there? The cover of this book, by the way, is Mama and Papa looking at brother and sister holding up a model of a volcano. And behind them is a picture of their school marked Our School. What's interesting, though, is the volcano is only a small part of this story, has nothing to do with sister, and is probably the most boring, like, science fair project in the world ever. Like in general. Like, it just, if a child builds a volcano for a science fair project and it in any way involves baking soda, they are disqualified in my book. So what is the Big School Project about? Well, my friends, it's about a big school project. Let's dive in, shall we? Oh boy. So we have these wonderful two-page spreads in this book. Mike really had a good time illustrating this book. The opening two-page spread is the bear family, Mama and Papa. Little honey bear on Papa's shoulders. Mama's looking through her binoculars at bear country. Sister and brother are walking with sticks, walking sticks. They're walking down the sunny dirt road deep in bear country. You see the bear's treehouse in the background. You see them in a bubble gazing up at the stars. You see them at the Bearsonian Museum learning from actual factual. You see, like, it looks like a red-crested woodpecker or something flying off. You see squirrels and butterflies. You see a family of possums hanging from a tree. Bees buzzing in the flowers. Is this just another nature walk? No. It's about how much Mama and Papa, brother and sister and honey, appreciate science, that exploring the world is the foundations of science. And it's easy for them to love science in bear country because, as noted up top, Actual Factual, who runs the Bearsonian Institution, is one of their close personal friends, and the kids are close personal friends with Actual Factual's nephew, Ferdy Factual, who we ran into for the first time ever years ago in the chapter book, The Berenstain Bears Beat Up a Nerd or something. I don't remember what it is. The word nerd gets thrown around a lot in that book. He also ends up sort of dating Trudy, whose last name slips my mind all of a sudden. He becomes sort of, he finds his hipster counterpart in this girl named Trudy, and they just become inseparable. They're and insufferable. So we learn to love Actual Factual's nephew throughout the course of those books. And most recently, he popped up in a Zonder Kids book where we discover that he's an atheist, and that's not a big deal. That Mama and Papa tell brother and sister that if one of their friends is an atheist, they need to get over it because it's none of their business. And they love him, and what's important is that we all find happiness in the world in our own way. In any case, this book is about finding happiness in the world through science, which is how Ferdy Factual finds happiness in the world. And the Bear family loves science as well. So, where to next? We get reintroduced to Ferdy. He's their partner in science, as they call him. They study the stars and the planets through a telescope. We see this is like another two-page spread, sort of a little vignettes of them exploring science. We see them with their arms around Ferdy. He's a great friend of theirs. We see them looking through a telescope. We see them looking through a microscope at microscopic creatures from pond water, which is a thing anyone can do if you have a microscope. We see them performing chemistry experiments, building model rocket ships that actually blast off with like jet, like fuel-propelled rocket ships. We see them observing nature, birds, looks like robins, I think, feeding the baby birds in the trees. And they also keep lizards, snakes, and frogs in a terrarium so they can observe reptiles. It's handy that they know Ferdy Factual. Ferdy Factual is he's an automatic scientist. I think that even if he wasn't related to actual Factual, this kid would want to know the world around him. He's not like Cousin Fred, who just likes accruing book knowledge. Ferdy Factual is engaged with the world. He is also a musician. Let's not forget that he and Trudy had their own band in school, an electronic band, like sort of a Kraftwerk, Devo-esque, like, Daft Punk electronic music band that I find fascinating. So not only two things we know about Ferdy is that he is very science minded and he's very artistically minded, but from a very scientific perspective. He likes to explore art and science as they intertwine, and that's important to remember when we get into his little fantasy world here. So the school science fair is coming up. It happens every year, and they are used to Ferdy Factual winning the science fair because he's the most science-minded cub at Bear Country School. The cubs then list what their concepts of science, what their ideas for the science fair this year are going to be. They're all fascinating in their own way. Sister is going to analyze the chemistry of rotten eggs. Now, this is one of those little side notes. I was terrible at science fairs. I hated them. I love science. I loved science as a kid. I loved learning about science. I loved learning about the way the world worked. I loved learning new theories of science. I loved science that disproved old theories. I loved astronomy. I loved geology. I loved just all the like the earth sciences, space sciences. I loved oceanography. I loved all that stuff. Dinosaurs, just anything. Chemistry, weird, gross science. I dug all of it. I watched science shows. I watched 3-to-1 Contact. I was a little too old for Bill Nye the Science Guy when that came out, but I did enjoy Beakman's World. I even liked the show Dr. Science, which was a parody of children's science shows. When I would be over at a friend's house and they had Nickelodeon on, we'd watch Mr. Wizard. It was just one of those things that I always loved learning about science, but I hated science fairs. I am not handy with my hands. I don't like constructing things. I get very nervous when presenting information to a crowd, or at least I did. And I didn't like to be judged. I liked to be judged on my knowledge, not on my ability to present that knowledge. I'm very different now than I was as a kid, but the idea, and I was very bad at taking an idea, something I wanted to know more about, and coming up with a hypothesis around it, to me, I was like, scientists are the ones doing this. I just want to read about it. I want to learn what other people have discovered. I didn't have an experimental mind. I wasn't an experimental child. I was curious, very curious about the world around me, but I was also terrified of the world around me. I love to learn through books. I was not a Ferdy Factual. I was more of a Cousin Fred. I'm an input. I'm not a hands-on type person. I was always blown away by other people's science fair projects, partly by how well they did them, mostly by how they conceived of them. I couldn't wrap my head around it. I didn't know how you came up with science project ideas, even books of science project ideas. I was just like, I don't know where anyone came up with this stuff. I'm not a scientist, just a science lover. But the Cubs all love science fairs, and Sister wants to analyze the chemistry of rotten eggs. I love, love, love this project. We'll get into it in a bit. Brother is going to build a model volcano that really erupts. Boo. Boring. Brother, everyone does that. Please don't build a model volcano that really erupts unless you're building a model volcano that really erupts based on the actual principles of what causes a volcano to erupt with pressure or some sort of like improv, like some sort of like you like sort of put together things to make like plate tecton, like so that you get the actual like reasons that not just baking soda and vinegar, that it has nothing to lava erupting out of a volcano has nothing to do or very little to do. I'm not a volcanologist, has very little to do, if anything, with the reactions of two household chemicals. It's just no one is pouring vinegar and baking soda into a crater or a mountain, and it's there's just too much of an explosion now. But Ferdy's idea is the most interesting. He wants to explain the theory of relativity. Sister's like, what's the theory of relativity? And brother's like, maybe the theory that all bears are relatives? Ferdy's like, not really. Aren't all bears relatives? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out this year. That's a little sneak peek of a book that's coming out. So the cubs get to work on their project. Sister learns more about rotten eggs in a week than most people would want to know in a lifetime. Brother learns so much about volcanoes he began to think one might erupt in the backyard. And Ferdy, well, Ferdy just sat thinking about the theory of relativity. And let's take a look. This is a wonderful, another wonderful couple of pages in this book. The first page is brother and sister. It's sort of a donut. At the top of the donut is sister surrounded by science books and notes she's taken, a computer monitor with a molecule drawn on it. And at the bottom is brother looking through a book with a computer monitor showing a cross-section of a volcanic eruption. Sister has surrounded by a chemical formula, also a cross-section of an egg. A hen looking at an egg it's just laid. And brother has images around him of three types of volcanic eruptions. A Vulcanian eruption, a Pelean eruption or Pelean eruption, and a Plinian eruption. And then a sort of a fantasy of the ground exploding under his house, or like the ground exploding in his yard with lava shooting out, which, not unprecedented, that is how volcanoes show up sometimes, usually in the ocean, though, so don't worry too much, brother. But volcanoes sometimes just show up, and then you can't do anything about it because you got a volcano. But what are we looking at here? What exactly is going on with brother's little head here? Well, he is looking at volcanoes. And what kind of volcanoes? Vulcanian, Pelean, Plinian. So a Vulcanian eruption involves moderate to violent explosions caused by the release of built-up gas pressure in thick, viscous magma. And the picture is, you know, it has like sort of a cross-section of a Vulcanian eruption. A Pelean eruption, which is named for the famous eruption of Mount Pelée in Martinique, is characterized by its pyroclastic flows. That's where hot gas and ash and volcanic material like surge down the sides of a volcano and just like bury and incinerate everything in their path. And so you can see the on the right side of the Pelean eruption, the pyroclastic flow just sort of shooting down the sides. But then the Plinian eruption, named for Plinian the Younger, who observed the explosion of Mount Vesuvius and whose uncle, Pliny the Elder, was killed in the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. It's also known as a Vesuvian eruption. And that's where it shoots really high up into the sky, like super high up into the sky, highly explosive. They produce towering columns of gas and ash that can reach the stratosphere. And so that's what we see here. Now, the Vesuvius eruption, you probably know, also had the pyroclastic flows. But we go off of Pliny's description of it going so high up into the air. It was just this massive eruption that went high up into the air. So three very specific types of eruptions. Now, what is Sister looking at? Sister is looking at the chemistry behind... Whoops. The chemistry behind rotten eggs. So... it looks like she has the formula. It might be a formula for hydrogen sulfide. Yes, H2S. I assume that's what she's looking at. I don't know anything about chemistry. So she's looking at H2A, but that's the chemical reaction that causes the smell of rotten eggs. So I don't know why she's reading so much. There's not a whole... I guess maybe she's looking at how to recreate the smell of rotten eggs. She just wants to learn everything she can about why rotten eggs smell rotten. What's the process behind them? We'll get into that when she does her science fair demonstration. But most interestingly is over here on the right, we have Ferdy. It says Ferdy's just thinking about the theory of relativity. So we have what looks like a bear with Albert Einstein hair writing E equals MC squared on the board. But then we have three really interesting illustrations. One is like a bare tree with a clock drooped over it, calling to mind Dali's Persistence of Time, famous Persistence of Time painting with the drooping clocks. We have two cones attached to the points on two axes. One axis is space, one axis is time. And then most telling is we have what looks to be a grid laid out, like a three-dimensional like grid laid out with two spheres, a large sphere and a smaller sphere, settling into the grid and sort of pulling the lines of the grid down. And that's the key to what we're looking at here, because Ferdy isn't just thinking about the theory of relativity in the abstract. He's thinking about the theory of relativity in the specifics. So what we're looking at, the grid with the balls. So Einstein's theory of relativity. I am not an expert on the theory of relativity. I know very little about the theory of relativity, but I do know that Einstein's theory of relativity deals with the concept that time is relative. And what we mean when we say time is relative, more or less kind of what we're saying, he's saying, that Einstein is saying, is that time is not an absolute, is not a constant. It's relative to speed and gravity. So high-speed travel can cause a time dilation, or like a massive, massive object like a black hole can actually dilate time. It can cause time to bend, along with space can bend. So time is relative to space and speed, gravity, velocity, all that stuff. In any case, that's what they mean by time is relative. It's the theory of relativity. And so when he came up with this idea, people were like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Time's a constant. He's like, no, it's not a constant. It's more fluid. Now, we have that. We have Dali's persistence of memory with the clocks melting. Now, Dali always claimed the persistence of memory had nothing to do with Einstein's theory of relativity. But Dali lied a lot, and he was kind of a terrible person. Because the whole idea of persistence of memory is that time isn't rigid. Time is fluid. Time exists, can exist in a dreamlike state, which is a way of, well, I'm not going to get into what the surrealists were all about. Surrealism was a political movement or artistic movement that had to do with forcing the viewer to look at the world through a different lens. It's one of the reasons the Third Reich hated the surrealist movement. They only wanted concrete representations of reality in their art, because when you allow an observer of art to see the world in a different way, it leads them to more abstract thinking. It causes them to question authorities. It causes them to question specifically fascist authority, which does not want followers to think about the world in a different way. So that's what the surrealists were literally trying to do. They were trying to change the world through art by saying, you can paint a clock drooping over a branch. You can have the most bizarre, abstract looking stuff in the world. You can have a guy with an apple for a head, maybe, or a train coming out of a fireplace. Doesn't matter. It can be surreal. And you can look at it and you can see it, and it may not make any sense, but it's a different way of looking at the world. That's like the here's a $1.25 explanation of surrealism. But Dali was a surrealist until he was kicked out of the surrealist school for siding with fascists. But he probably just sided with the fascists because he was a jerk and he wanted to be contrary, but they kicked him out of the surrealist. You can be kicked out of a movement. He was kicked out of the surrealist movement. So he wasn't literally a surrealist later in life, but then he became friends with Walt Disney, and then he became like more of a media personality. Dali was weird. In any case, kind of a jerk. Einstein's theory and Dali's painting challenge perceptions of time. So when you're thinking about the theory of relativity, what we're seeing is Ferdy Factual thinking about the theory of relativity as a scientific concept E=mc², and we'll explain that in a second, and also as an abstract artistic concept, because we know he's an artistic young boy. He's looking at different ways of visualizing the relativity of time, at also visualizing the way the theory of relativity, much like the surrealist movement, changed people's perceptions on everything. And we'll get into that in a second, because the theory of relativity, when you hear that the theory of relativity changed the world, you may not understand beyond like, didn't it lead to the creation of the atomic bomb? Kind of, yes, but also it just opened the doors to seeing the world in different ways. The flat plane, the grid with the balls sinking into it. What's that all about? This is curved space-time and geometric gravitation. And what does that have to do with the theory of relativity? Okay. In Einstein's theory of relativity, mass distorts space-time. So if you imagine space, which is, you know, three-dimensional, as a two-dimensional plane, just for ease of concept, if you imagine space as just a flat two-dimensional plane, imagine like a rubber sheet. It's flexible, but it's pulled taut. You take two balls of different masses and you set them on that rubber sheet. The ball with the greater, they're both going to make indentations in the sheet. They're both going to pull on it. But the ball with the greater mass is going to pull on it more, creating more of an indentation. So things that pass, that are rolling along this sheet, creating their own indentations, are going to tend to roll towards the larger of the two balls. And in fact, the smaller of those two balls is also going to be affected by the larger of the two balls. The closer it is, the faster it'll roll towards it. The further away it is, the less it'll be affected. But it'll still be affected. It's still pulling down on that sheet, right? Now, of course, space isn't a flat plane. It is an infinite number of intersecting planes in all directions, right? But massive objects like that ball, like a planet, like a star, like a black hole, still bend like on those infinite number of planes. It still distorts them out of shape like a rubber sheet, but it distorts them, you know, all around, like in 360 degrees, right? Like all around it. So things will come rolling in on the plane of space from all directions towards the more massive objects in the sky. But of course, you're also being rolled in other directions by other massive objects. So things in like the solar system get held in something of a stasis going around and around because of gravity, because they're all being pulled towards different massive objects that eventually lock them into orbits and such. This is way too simple, but that's just like, so what that is illustrating is Einstein saying massive objects like stars actually bend space, and in doing so, of course, bend time, because time is relative. So if space is bending, time is bending. And we'll get to how that ended up being kind of proven in a second. But so we see the intersection of time and space, we see the flat plane, we see Dolly's clock, we see Einstein himself, E equals MC square. That's where we are. The Cubs are all enjoying science and getting ready for the big day. I hope I haven't bored you too much. So, Sister's working on her project. Her plan, she's going to break real rotten eggs. I don't know how she's going to get rotten eggs, but I guess there's ways you can rotten egg, to demonstrate how awful they smell. And then she will, in person, recreate hydrogen sulfide to show how that's the same chemical, like it's the same chemical, all right? Brother, on the other hand, is going to build a papier-mâché cone with baking soda, I guess, in it. He's making a papier-mâché volcano, which is the worst thing in the world. Brother, don't do it. You don't do it. This is not... Brother, please. We've seen this done before. However, the interesting part of this spread... So Sister shows a rotten egg with fumes coming up. It shows an Erlenmeyer flask with fumes coming out, labeled hydrogen sulfide H2S. Brother is just like an art project, chicken wire and flour and newspapers. He's making a papier-mâché volcano. But Ferdy Factual is sitting, thinking, with his finger up to his head about the theory of relativity, and he has a huge word bubble above him that is just looks like it has a page of something. We see a few phrases, you know, if you read it, it's, you can only see a few, you know, beginnings and the endings and middles of sentences. But we do see 1.7 seconds of arc. We see manifest in the following way: neighborhood of the sun, total eclipse of the sun, displaced outwards. What is he talking about? Ferdy is actually thinking about Einstein's paper on the theory of relativity and his projected idea. See, he proposed that gravity isn't a force. So Newton always thought that gravity was a force that pulled, but is actually a result of the curvature of space-time, as we talked about. And so he predicted, because you can't reproduce this, but one form of experiment is predicting how something will react to something that you can observe. He predicted that the light from distant stars would bend as it passed near a massive object, say our sun, following curved space-time. So during a total eclipse of the sun, scientists looked up, British astronomer, in 1919, British astronomer Sir Arthur Eddington and his team, Einstein predicted that the stars near the sun would appear displaced outwards from their usual positions due to the sun's gravity bending their light during the eclipse. Like, during the eclipse, you'd actually be able to see them. And these stars would appear further out than they usually do because of the way the light bends. So in Sir Arthur Eddington's astronomers and his team, in 1919, they photographed the positions of the stars near the sun. They observed the displacement, and they proved Einstein's theory of the curvature of space-time. And this was huge. It catapulted Einstein to fame. Like, this is one of the things that made people go, like, this guy's a genius, because this abstract and complex theory, he figured out how to prove it just by looking up in the sky from down on Earth. And so what we're seeing is a section from that theory. Ferdy's thinking about it. So this is one of the first experimental proofs of Einstein's theory of relativity, general theory of relativity. It overturned, like, centuries of Newtonian physics, and it revolutionized our understanding of gravity and just led us to, like, phew, like, think about things in a completely different way. Again, like the surrealists. In his original writings and lectures on general relativity, Einstein discussed the theoretical bending of light near massive objects, calculating it at approximately 1.75 arc seconds for light passing near the sun. So Arthur Eddington wrote about it. Yada, yada, yada. So that's what we're seeing there. It could be from the foundation of general theory of relativity. Could also be from Arthur Eddington's book, Space, Time, and Gravitation from 1920. Could be either of those things. Could be neither of those things. Could be Mike summarizing it. I don't know, but that's what Ferdy has read. That's what he's thinking of. So it's the day of the science fair. They're all hauling their stuff in. We see a bunch of, not in, out. It's outdoors. But Ferdy's experiment, and he's there with actual factual, is covered with a cloth. We see a student has brought a cutaway beehive. Very dangerous if their students are allergic to bees. There's a student with some sort of, like, mechanical apparatus. We see Teacher Fred and Teacher Jane, or not Teacher Fred, Teacher Jane and Teacher, what's his face? Bob, as the judges, ready to hand out awards. We see a robot that can clean up trash. We see that the machine is an engineering project that runs on peanut oil. We see the cutaway beehive. We see cutaway anthills. We see lemons powering a small light bulb and a recycled newspaper that Kit has used to make a helicopter, I guess, is a thing. It doesn't look like it would actually fly. It looks way too heavy. I don't understand. But presumably it worked, or maybe it didn't work, because this helicopter doesn't win jack. Sister demonstrates the rotten eggs and the smell by creating, was it sulfur dioxide, hydrogen sulfide? She creates hydrogen sulfide right there at the fair in front of everyone, in front of God and everyone. So what she probably did was, so in a rotten egg, the bacteria break down the proteins of the egg, and that's what creates hydrogen sulfide gas. One way you can do it is you can mix iron sulfide with hydrochloric acid in a test tube or an Erlenmeyer flask, which is probably what she did, which means she was handling hydrochloric acid, which is very corrosive and highly dangerous, creating what is in essence a poisonous gas, a toxic gas outdoors that smells like poop and sewage. It's highly toxic at higher concentrations. It can irritate the nose, throat, the mouth. It can cause dizziness, headaches, or nausea. It's highly flammable. And also prolonged exposures in an unventilated space can be harmful. But even outdoors, if someone is allergic to eggs, it can really, especially if it's coming from a rotten egg and it gets airborne, it can really mess them up. So Sister probably should make sure that anyone near this project is not anymore. And then Brother shows off his volcano, which I guess works. The judges were very impressed. I don't know. But then it's Ferdy's turn. And all he does is he pulls aside a sheet. It says explanation of theory of relativity on his board, E equals MC square. And that's it. And Brother's like, what? And Ferdy's like, it just energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. And Brother's like, okay. And then it's time for prizes. Sister wins For her Rotten Egg project. Brother gets second for his volcano. And then it looks like Lizzie Bruin invented a robot that cleans up trash. I don't know why Brothers beat Lizzie's. I understand why Sisters beat everybody. It's a perfect science fair project. You're explaining a process. You're explaining a chemical reaction. You are demonstrating it in both the, like, rotten egg in real life and also how the chemical is created. Like, you are, it's fully on brand. It's tactile. It's impactful. It stinks. It's simple, easy to understand, whereas a robot is very difficult to understand. I mean, you can see it in action, but what is really happening in there? Nobody knows. Robo went crazy and we had to kill it. And then Brothers is just an art project. I don't understand why Brother got second place. I guess because it's cute, fun. Why didn't the bees win? Why didn't the ants? Why not a machine that runs on peanut oil? And why didn't Ferdy win? Well, because he didn't explain anything. But when the Cubs go up and say, "We're really sorry you didn't win," he was like, "Oh, it doesn't matter. I understand the theory of relativity better now." And that's what matters. And Brother and Sister are like, "Well, maybe he deserved first prize after all." And they shake his hand. They say, "Congrats." And he says, "Thank you. It was nothing." And it, of course, wasn't nothing. And what I love about this book, what I love, love, love about this book, is that it explores science from several different angles. It explores it from the book learning, the we are discovering what other people have discovered angle. It explores it from the experimental angle, the I need to understand how this chemical reaction works angle. It explores it from an artistic point of view. How did the theory of relativity affect the history of Western culture and Eastern culture? How did it affect artistic culture? When the surrealists learned that time was relative, that light could be bent, that space was in fact curved by mass, that gravity wasn't a force, it was a result of other forces pulling on the actual fabric of the universe, how did that affect art and artists? And why is that important? And so Ferdy is like thinking about all of this. And he doesn't get any kind of a recognition for it. The teachers are like, "Okay, well, you figured out the E=mc², but that was what is written on the paper, so whatever." But Ferdy's like, "That's not why I was doing this. This isn't why I do this. I do this because I am trying to learn how the world works. But not just how the world works, how it all connects." And Brother and Sister really take that to heart in this book. They're like, "We did a good job. We really worked hard." And they did. They worked super hard on their projects. And they won. They got recognized for it. And well-deserved, except for Brother. I don't think why Brother. I don't know. It's not even a good-looking volcano, Brother. But Sister especially was like, I want to know more about a subject, and I want to be able to demonstrate my knowledge, and I want to be able to, for other people to come away understanding it as well, which is the heart of the science fair. You're there to share the knowledge. Ferdy was not there to share his knowledge, but I am sure he would. We know he's a generous kid. We know that he enjoys exploring the world with Brother and Sister. And so I'm sure if anyone asked him, he would be able to explain it. But he's like, "You know what? I don't need to create anything to demonstrate my knowledge of this. I'm still thinking about it, basically." He does deserve an award, maybe not a science fair award, but just like a science mind award for this. In any case, I find this book fascinating. I find this book, The Big School Project, it could be called The Berenstain Bears and the Concept of Science, or the Concept of Space and Time. Like, it's just, it's huge. Mike doesn't go into any of this because it's more about the delight of discovery, the delight of knowledge, being a more like, you know, expanding your mind. And like different concepts of science, like what it means to learn, what it means to demonstrate, why we pursue knowledge, how we pursue knowledge. I love that Mike is like, taking a walk with your family is science if you're paying attention. You know, like having a pet can be science if you're observing it and learning from it. You know, there's just you can look at the stars, you can look at the ocean, you can look at the world around you. That's science. If you are figuring things out by looking at them, you're doing science. You know, the most basic form, and that's how people started. There was a theory, scientists hundreds of years ago were like, experimenting is wrong. You never experiment. We know everything we need to know just by looking around us. Recreating God's world has nothing to do with learning. But then as they went along, they were like, there are are actually things we can learn about X by looking at Y. We can learn about A by looking at B, or recreating, seeing if we can recreate something, or make predictions based on our observations and see if they actually happen. That's how you learn about things that are too far away to touch, or you can't reproduce on Earth because it's too big or too hot or too deep or too massive. So you say, well, okay, well, to prove this is the truth, or as close to the truth as I can come, I predicted that if this happens, then this will happen because of my theory. And then you watch and you wait and you see, and lo and behold, the stars do appear further away from the sun. And you're like, I was right. The mass of the sun actually bends the light around it and makes that look different. It's fascinating. Fascinating stuff. Thank you, Mike, for putting this into my eyes. I really liked it. I had to take pictures of this book because it's not available digitally. It is available as a big old floppy back. So that's the Berenstain Bears Big School Project. I'm already over time. So thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being a part of my big experiment. We're coming up on 10 years. I'm super excited. You want me to cover some old books? You want me to cover some stuff I haven't looked at in about 10 years? Let me know. If you have any requests for books you'd like me to do a repeat of, I'll leave it in the comments. If you're watching this on YouTube, thanks for joining me there. If you're listening to me, you go to YouTube and at least that sounds whiny. Give my page a like, subscribe to it, and maybe there's something you'll enjoy seeing there. I don't know. In any case, thank you so much once again for joining me for the Big School Project, and I'll see you all next time deep in Bear Country.